So this is prose rather than
poetry. So I'm just going to read, and then we'll go on to the word by word. Synonyms.
Tathudyastatlatale mayonama dhanavendrastri puradipatir bhagavata puranina trilokisham chikirshuna nirdabdha swapuratrayas tatprasadalabdhapatu mayavanam nacharyo mahadevena parirakshito vikata sudarshana bhayo mahiyate.
Okay. Tataha. The planet known as Sutala.
Adastat.
Below.
Talatale.
And the planet known as Talatala. Maya ha, Maya, Nama, named, Dhanava Indra, the king of the Dhanava demons, Tripura Adipatiki,
the lord of the three cities,
Bhagavata, by the most powerful. Purarana, Lord Shiva, who is known as Tripurari.
Lord Shiva, who is known as Tripurari.
A Triloki, of the three worlds. Cham, the good fortune. Chakirshuna,
who is desiring.
Nirdagda,
burned.
Swapuratriyaha, whose three cities. Tat-prasadat, by Lord Shiva's mercy. Labda, obtained. Padaha, a kingdom. God bless you. Mayavinam acharyaha. Who is the acharya or master of all the conjurers? Mahadevena, by Lord Shiva. Parirakshitaha, protected. Vigata Sudarshana Bhoyaha, who is not afraid of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And his Sudarshana Chakra. Mahiyate, is worshipped. So translation, beneath the planet known as Sutala is another planet named Talatala, which is ruled by the Dhanava demon named Maya. Maya is known as the Acharya, master of all the Mayavis, who can invoke the powers of sorcery. For the benefit of the three worlds, Lord Shiva, who is known as Tripurari, once set fire to the three kingdoms of Maya, but later, being pleased with him, he returned his kingdom. Since that time, Maya Dhanava has been protected by Lord Shiva, and therefore he falsely thinks that he need not fear the Sudarshan Chakra of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there's no purport. I'll read the next text, and then we'll comment on that. And this next text, text 29. Tatulastan mahatale kadravayanam sarpanam naikashirasam krodavasho nama gana kuhaka takshaka kalhiha shushanari pradhana mahabhogavanta patatri rajadipatehe purushavaha anavaratam udvijyamana swat kalatrapatya surit kutumba sangena kvachit ramatha viharante. Translation, the planetary system known as Talatala is known as below Talatala is known as Mahatala. It is the abode of many hooded snakes. descendants of Khodru were always very angry. The great snakes who are prominent are Kuaka, Takshaka, Kulia, and Sushena. The snakes in Mahatala are always disturbed by fear of Garuda, the carrier of Lord Vishnu. But although they are full of anxiety, some of them nevertheless sport with their wives, children, friends, and relatives. So, purport by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. It is stated here that the snakes who live in the planetary system known as Mahatala are very powerful and have many hoods. They live with their wives and children and consider themselves very happy, although they are always full of anxiety because of Garuda, who comes there to destroy them. This is the way of material life. Even if one lives in the most abominable condition, he still thinks himself happy with his wife, children, friends, and relatives. So, Om Gada Timbananda Shah, Gadanjana Shalakaya Chakshur, and Miditam Yena Tosma Ishi Gurave Namaha. So there's some very interesting stories regarding these two verses and their purports in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The first one is quite an interesting story. I don't think the devotees have heard this story before. This is about Tripurari, who is Lord Shiva, who basically destroyed the demons in their different cities. So this story begins as follows. There were three demons, and actually at that time, these demons were very pious. Because originally demons were pious, okay? And they were just called demons because they were their mother's name. You know, you had Kashyapa, Diti, and Aditi. So Daichas. Daichas means demons. So originally they were very pious, but they still competed with the demigods. So there's this competition between the demigods and the demons. And anyway, so originally they were pious. Pious in the sense, not that they really worshipped Vishnu or anything like that, but they were pious in the sense that they followed the Vedic literatures and they respected Brahmanas. I mean, like you see with Ravana, like that. And more or less, they were okay. They weren't doing any sinful activities, vikarmic activities. So there were these three demons. Their names were Vidyunmali, Tarat, Kasura, and Viryavan. And they thought, like most demons think, we want to become eternal. We don't want to die. And we see, of course, that's one of the primary motivating factors for modern medicine, modern science, etc., like that. We don't want to die. And we talked about this the other day, how eventually they want to download their consciousness into a computer, if that's possible, which is not, because life comes from life. And we were talking about the singularity. Remember that? The singularity where man becomes machine, machine becomes man, and we have like a very nice symbiotic relationship with the machines. I mean, completely nonsense. Anyway. Of course, to a large extent, this sort of thing is happening, but it's nonsense in the sense it'll make everybody miserable and make everybody a servant of the machines. Like you see now with the video games, isn't it? There's this sort of a singularity there where people who are very much immersed in video games, they enter into this virtual reality. And many of them don't come out. It's like practically the Matrix is already here for many people who are playing video games, going to virtual worlds. Like there's one virtual world called Second Life, which has roughly 10 million people living in it at any one time. I told this story before, but some of you weren't there. That one time I went in there just to see, you know, I entered into the Matrix. So I went in there just to see what it was like. And there was a Hare Krishna temple there. And there were deities, and I just wanted to see who was there. And I ran into one of my disciples there. And he was quite tall, which is different than real life. So anyway, I won't mention who it was. But I said, what are you doing here? He said, well, this is life. Anyway, whatever he said. And everyone there had great powers. You know, you could jump from one place to another. Has anyone ever been in this place? No, don't do it. Because you get caught in, and hours after hours, you're just like lost. You don't come out.
It is like the Matrix, basically. Anyways, you have powers, you can go in, they were selling things, they were selling perches and dhotis and everything like that. And they had their own, currency called Linden dollars. Yeah, Linden dollars. You could buy them for real dollars in the material world. And like now they have this Bitcoin thing, you heard about that before. So everything's becoming virtual. So there's this, anyway, so this is a demoniac thing that you can live forever using modern science. Of course, in the old days, they thought they could live together by worshipping demigods, particularly Lord Brahma. So you had demons who were worshipping Lord Brahma, like Hiranyakashipu and, you know, Ravana and other people, who thought, you know, this would give them immortality. So these three demons, getting back to the story, performed austerities on their tiptoes. That seems to be one of the types of yoga asanas that people do when they want to perform austerities, stand on your tiptoes for 100 years. Lord Brahma appeared, and he said, what do you want, my dear devotees? And these three personalities said, we want to become immortal. And Lord Brahma, as he always says, it's not possible, because I'm not immortal. You know, I have to die after some time. But you can basically choose how you want to die. This is basically what he does. Like Hiranyakashipu said, in a negative way, I don't want to be killed by day or night, you know, man or beast, weapons or anything like that. And he basically chose the way he wanted to die. And there was two other demons, Sunda and Upasunda, who chose the way they wanted to die, would be being killed by each other. And eventually it was arranged when they were drunk, Lord Brahma arranged a beautiful girl to come between them. So they would fight with each other and kill each other. That's a whole story of Mahabharata. I don't have time to tell that story. So anyway, so these demons said, well, if you can, we'll die only if you provide us with three cities. You know, three cities, and all these cities can be destroyed with one arrow at one time. Then we'll die. And, you know, that's pretty difficult to destroy three cities with one arrow at one time, right? That'll be the time we die. So, Lord Brahma said, yes, if you want those three cities, you have to go to the demon Mayadhanava, who's being described here in the verse. So they went to the demon, the verse says, yeah, Mayadhanava, he's the acharya of all Mayavais who can invoke the power of sorcery. So Mayadhanava constructed these three cities. One city was constructed with gold, another city was constructed with silver, and another city was constructed with iron. And the gold city was in the heavenly planets. The silver city was in, you know, in the clouds or something like that. And the iron city was down here on earth. It's like you see the construction on the earth is generally, you know, with iron nowadays, these big skyscrapers and everything like that. So, anyway, so these three cities were constructed, and these demons were powerful. They would move. And also, another thing about these three cities, that every 1,000 years, they would just like join together. In other words, just be like superimposed on each other. You understand what I mean? They would somehow be connected with each other. Somehow or other. I don't know the scientific methodology for it. So anyway, so these they were flying around in these cities, and they were very happy. And the demigods, they got really upset with this whole thing. You know, these demons have become very powerful, and they're becoming more powerful, stronger than us. So what are we going to do? So they went to Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma says, there's nothing I can do about it. Then they went to Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva said, but they're pious, you know, they haven't done anything wrong. They're worshiping me, performing all the Vedic rituals. This is such an interesting story. What are we going to do about it? You know, you have to leave them alone. And so the demigods thought, you know, finally we got to go to Lord Vishnu. Okay, they went to Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu pretty much said the same thing, you know, they're pious. But we can arrange that they become impious. So Lord Vishnu created out of his body, he created this bogus philosopher. Has anyone heard this story before? No, good. It's always nice to tell a story that nobody's heard. So
So Lord Vishnu created this bogus philosopher, and he said, I want you to go and preach bogus philosophy to these three demons. Okay. So this bogus philosopher got three or four other disciples, you know. You know, there's people who follow any damn fool. Practically anybody can get followers. If you arrange things properly. So anyway, he got three other disciples, and in order to encourage these demons to take instruction and initiation from this bogus guru, the bogus philosopher. And the bogus philosopher was given this philosophy by Vishnu. Okay. That actually there's no karma, like something like the karma mimamsa thing. You know, you do your good thing, work nicely, and then you'll get the good result. There's no next life, it doesn't matter. It's practically the Epicurean philosophy or the Charvaka philosophy. Epicurean philosophy means eat, drink, and be merry. For tomorrow you may die. It's like there was one TV show about a man who was supposed to die in a year. I don't know if you ever saw that TV show when you were young. And it just showed how he was trying to enjoy life to the utmost extent before he died. I think it was called Run for Your Life or something like that. Does anyone remember that? Do you remember that? Vaguely. So, I wish I could remember Krishna so well like this. So anyway, so he was preaching this philosophy, you know, when you're dead, and there ain't no God, you know, why are you doing this worship of the demigods? Why are you worshiping Lord Shiva? Why are you doing any of this Vedic stuff, you know? No Vedic stuff, no dotis, no saris, no. It's funny. So Narada Muni, he was employed by Lord Vishnu to go to the demons to try to encourage them to take initiation and shelter from this bogus guru. So Narada Muni, he went to the demons and he said, look, I've been convinced too. I've taken reinitiation too. And so you should go. We should tell this story to Tripurari Maharaj. It's really interesting. He would like this. You should, because it involves his namesake, Lord Shiva. Actually, incidentally, Lord Shiva is pronounced Lord Shiva, not Shiva. You hear the difference? Shiva or Shiva. It's Shiva. It's Shiva, not Shiva. Because if it was Shiva, it would have a long I. So everybody has to be careful. Because when you pronounce it with a long I, it becomes it means jackal. Wow. Instead of auspicious. The word Shiva means auspicious in Sanskrit. It's actually the name of Krishna too. So getting back to the story. So Narada Muni goes and says, you know, I've taken reinitiation, you know. This worship of Lord Vishnu, you know, just too much, you know. He's a new guru on the block. So these demons, they started to accept this bogus guru who actually came from Vishnu. It's interesting, isn't it? And then they accepted his instructions. They gave up worshiping Lord Shiva. They became impious because they took up the Epicurean or the Charvaka philosophy is beg, borrow, steal, get yourself some ghee, which is similar to the philosophy of eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you may die. Because in the Vedic conception, ghee is actually the source of sense gratification. And it is. I mean, ghee is just like such a wonderful taste. We used to cook all the food in ghee. That's before oil became the prominent means of cooking in the Krishna consciousness movement. In the old days, everything was cooked in ghee. Anyway, so they became very impious at that point. So then Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva got together to attack these demons. And they waited for the 1,000-year cycle when all the cities would be together. And Lord Shiva went on a golden chariot. And the chariot driver was Lord Brahma. So Lord Brahma was driving the chariot, and Lord Shiva, and all the demigods, they actually empower the arrow. And this, of course, was the Pashupati Astra. Astra means weapon, and Pashupati, that's Lord Shiva's
like trident or personal weapon. So Lord Shiva fired this arrow at these three cities, which were all together, you know, which were somehow or other superimposed at this particular time, and destroyed the three cities, and the three demons died. Of course, Maya Dhanava didn't die. So then the question is what happened to that bogus teacher and his disciples? They didn't die because they were created by Vishnu. So they had another mission. So Lord Vishnu said to them, you should go to the desert and wait until it's Kali Yuga. And then you can come out and start teaching and become bogus gurus and teach bogus philosophy and materialistic philosophy. And then somehow or other, they and their disciples are here in Kali Yuga. Interesting story, isn't it? So, is there more? The story of Maya Dhanava, I think we told that the other day in class, that here it's mentioned that Maya Dhanava was not afraid of the Sudarshan Chakra. Later on, he did become afraid. And that's part of the story I told about the burning of the Kandava forest, that when Agni, he had indigestion because he was had drunk too much ghee during a sacrifice by Maharaj Mandata, who had performed sacrifice for 11 years, I think, for ghee. Then Agni had to take the herbs in the Kandava forest, which means burning the Kandava forest, and Arjuna and Krishna assured Agni that he could do this and protect the forest. And within that forest, there was Maya Dhanava, and Maya Dhanava almost got burnt up. And the reason we're talking about the Sudarshan Chakra, the chakra was actually hovering overhead, and anybody who tried to escape the Kandava forest was actually chopped up to bits or burnt with the Sudarshan Chakra. The story is in the Mahabharata. It's a Mahabharata, famous Mahabharata story. And so, therefore, he would, at that point, Maya Dhanava did become afraid of the Sudarshan Chakra. Maya Dhanava surrendered to Krishna and Arjuna, and used his mystic powers in Krishna's service to construct the assembly house that was there in Indraprasht. The Pandavas were given Indraprasht. Indraprasht was actually a desert area. When it was decided by Dhritarashtra to divide the kingdom, you know, so there wouldn't be fighting between the cousin brothers, and he gave them the worst part. It was like giving them the Gobi Desert or the Sahara Desert or something like that, because there was no water, there was nothing. But by the mercy of Krishna, and also with the help of Maya Dhanava, then this place was actually made into a heavenly place. And that assembly house that was constructed by Maya Dhanava, which we mentioned the other day in class, but today we can mention it again because Maya Dhanava is being mentioned. That assembly house was constructed in such a way that water looked like land, land looked like water, and the doorways were so clear that you couldn't see it was a doorway. So when Duryodhana came, he basically fell in the water because he thought it was land, and bumped his head in the doorway because he thought it was an opening to the outside. And then Draupadi was laughing hysterically at him. And this caused Duryodhana to become further inflamed and angry and envious of the Pandavas, in addition to the fact that during the Rajasuya sacrifice, he was the one who was counting all the donations that were meant for Yudhisthira Maharaj and the Pandavas. So anyway, so that's the story of Maya Dhanava. Next verse, of course, talks about the sons of Kadru. So that's also another story from the Mahabharata. So the story is as follows. Kashyapa had quite a few wives. He was one of the Prajapatis. And we mentioned, of course, Diti and Aditi and Danu, who were different wives of Kashyapa. But he also had two wives named Kadru and Vinata. They were like sisters. And Kadru is mentioned here as the mother of the snakes. So what happened is that he said to his wives, who were sisters, you can choose how many children you want to have. You know, one of you can have 100 children or 1,000 children. 100 children, that's right.
and the other one can just have like two children. So you choose. So Kadru, she chose to have 1,000, and Vinata chose to have 2 nice kids. So what happened is that Kadru gave birth to 1,000 or 100 snakes. I know it was 100 snakes. 100 snakes, and Vinata gave birth to 2 eggs. I mean, somehow or other, these higher entities, they can give birth to other types of living entities. Not that they have entities who have the same genes as they do. But actually, it's interesting, because when the those who study science, genetic engineering, everything like that, they find similarities in basically all the forms of life, the same basic genetic structure which is built up on for the higher entities, you know, the human beings like that. And the reason is because we all come from a common source, and Krishna has used the same pattern rather than having to repeat the basic pattern for all living entities. So Kadru gave birth to 1,000 snakes, Vinata, 2 eggs, and she sat on the eggs, and there was like 50 years of the demigods, and the eggs still didn't hatch. So what happened is that she knocked a hole in one of the eggs, to just see what was happening. And out of that hole, the cracked egg, came this half form of a bird. And this person, of course, was named Aruna, who later became the chariot driver of the sun god. And he flew into the air and he cursed his mother. He said, "You're going to become a servant of your co-wife. And because you've done this, you opened me up. So you better wait till this other egg hatches." So she waited till the other egg hatched, and the other egg had who in it? Does anyone remember? Garuda. Had Garuda, the famous bird carrier, the supreme personality, got it. So eventually, that curse that was given by Aruna came true because Vinata and Kadru had a wager, and Vinata said that the tail of the horse of Chayashrava was white, and Kadru said the tail is black. And so whoever would win the wager would become the master of the other person, along with their children, would become servants. The servant, the one who became the servant, would their children would be servants too. So Kadru arranged that her little snake sons would go into the tail of Chayashrava, so it looked like the tail was black, and she won the wager. And so Garuda and his mother, Vinata, became the servants of Kadru and her sons, the snakies. Okay. It's not all the snakes were bad. I mean, some of them are good. Can anyone think of a name of a good snake? Vasuki, another one. Shesh. He's one of the sons too. So it's not that they're all, snakes are all bad. I mean, snakes can do nice service too. Sometimes they eat rats and stuff like that. And they protect people's gardens. It's not that we should become angry with all snakes. I mean, some snakes are actually very helpful. It's just the poisonous, envious ones we're not interested in. And it says, there's of course that injunction that even a great personality becomes, a great sage becomes happy to see when a snake is killed. And there's a story with Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when Prabhupada was there in his ashram, in the ashram of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur ordered that a snake be killed. And Prabhupada was thinking, what is this? You know, is this compassion? How can you do this? And then he read this statement. And then Prabhupada said, yes, Guru Maharaj was right in doing that. So, anyway, so then Garuda, this is a long story. Then Garuda asked his cousin brothers, or half brothers actually. He asked his half brothers, you know, how can we be freed from this servitude? His half brother said, by getting the nectar, the amrit, that was gotten from the churning of the milk ocean, and bringing it to us so we can become immortal. And then you won't have to be our servants anymore. So, to make a long story short, Garuda flew there, defeated the demigods, stole the nectar, but in the meantime he had a deal with Indra that when he offered the nectar to the snakes, and the snakes went to take their ritual bath before taking the nectar, Indra would take back the nectar before the snakes ate the nectar or drank the nectar. Is everybody following so far? And so what happened is, that's what happened. And then, of course, Garuda also got the benediction from Indra that snakes would be his food. And actually, Garuda, according to the Mahabharata, has authorized as his food everything except for what? Brahmins. At that point, he was authorized to eat everything except for Brahmins. Because one day he went to a village of Nishadas, like low-class people, started to eat them all. And by accident, one of the Brahmanas had fallen in love with one of the Nishada women. And he just swallowed the Brahman, and then he felt a choking in his throat. And he understood he had swallowed a Brahmana. And he said, "Please get out." And the Brahmana said, "Can I take my wife with me?" And then... And the Brahman and his wife got out of Garuda's mouth. And then there's this famous story in the Mahabharata how Garuda ate a turtle and an elephant. They were two great personalities who would curse each other to become turtles and elephants, and they were fighting each other life after life. And Garuda was, talk about the big bird, you know. Garuda was such a big bird, he practically couldn't find a place to light upon, to, you know, to lit, land. Because he was so heavy, especially with the elephant and the giant tortoise. These were giant tortoise. I mean, tortoise was as big as the Earth planet, basically. And the elephant was similar size. So anyway, so Garuda, according to here, becomes the enemy of all the snakes. And the interesting point here, just one final point, is that even though the snakes have this enemy, and Garuda is always enthusiastic to eat them. Of course, he doesn't eat Kaliya, because Kaliya has the lotus footprints of the Supreme Personality of Godhead on his head. And this is because of the whole Kaliya story, where Krishna chased Kaliya out of the Jamuna River. And I'm not going to tell that story, because there's not enough time. But otherwise, the snakes are always afraid of Garuda. Even during the Mahabharata war, the Ramayana war, that Indrajit fired his snake weapon at Lakshman, and Lakshman was actually, you know, just like, couldn't move. And finally, Garuda was employed, Hanuman went to Garuda, and Garuda was employed to get rid of the snakes. So, anyway, the point is the snakes are always nervous about the birds, about Garuda. Just like you see, like, even worms, they're worried about birds, because birds come down and eat worms. And so what does this mean for us? We're not snakes, and we're not birds. But the time factor, death, is there for everyone. It's going to swoop down and get us at some time. And we should definitely be afraid in the sense of understanding that, as they say, time and tide waits for no one. You can't, if you lose 1 minute, 1 second, 1 instance, you can't buy it back. I was listening to a class of Prabhupada. You can't buy it back for millions and millions of dollars. You know, you offer someone millions of dollars and say, "Get me back the last minute." Can't do it. So that's the time factor. So Garuda represents the time factor. And, you know, the time factor may come for us in a different form, but it's still the same thing. It may be the form of a disease, it may be the form of a car accident, it may be the form of an attack on the street, maybe the form of a heart attack, any of these things. And so we should actually be fearful of the time factor taking away the duration of our life, and utilize every minute in Krishna's service rather than wasting it, as Prabhupada said here, thinking ourselves happy. I'm paraphrasing this in the final sentence of the purport. Thinking ourselves happy with wife, children, friends, and relatives. Not that we should reject you know, if you happen to be a household of wife, children, friends, and relatives. But to think, to take shelter of that, to think that that is the ultimate happiness, and not try to engage wife, children, friends, and relatives in Krishna consciousness, means that you're not aware of the time factor, which is ahani, hani, bhutani, gacchanti, yamalayam, which according to Maharaj Yudhisthira is the most amazing thing in this world, that people are not aware of the time factor. What is this? This was a discussion between Yudhisthira Maharaj and Yamaraj. Yamaraj asked Yudhisthira Maharaj, what is the most amazing thing? And the most amazing thing, according to Yudhisthira, was that we see everybody going to Yamaraj, or death, but we think we're not going to go. Kim ascharya atapuram. Isn't that wonderful? That's the Sanskrit for that. Anyway, so these are some of the points. We have about a minute left for class. Yeah.
What's the name of the guru that Vishnu created?
I don't remember. But it's a Puranic story, I mean.
But is Shankaracharya somehow related?
In my reading of the story, I didn't see any relationship between him and Shankaracharya, although could be. It didn't say it wasn't related, it didn't say it was related. But this is the famous story of, you know, the Tripura is the name of the three cities. Pura means like city or town, the word Pura. And Tri means three. You know, it's very similar to the English word, so Tripura. And therefore, Lord Shiva is called Tripurari, which means the person who destroyed the three cities. Oh, that bow, incidentally, was the same bow that was broken by Lord Ramchandra later on, that Lord Shiva used. And that was the bow that was given to Janaka Maharaj. And Sita Devi actually was the only one able to pick up the bow. Sita Devi and Ram were the only ones able to pick up the bow. And the person who could string the bow would be the one who would marry Sita Devi, but Lord Ram not only strung the bow, he broke the bow. And the reason the bow broke was not because he broke the bow, is an interesting story, is because the bow did not want to be used in a fight against Lord Shiva's devotee, Ravana. So the bow actually broke itself. This is an esoteric story. Because the bow didn't want to, you know, you understand, it was Lord Shiva's bow, didn't want to be used against Lord Shiva's devotee. So he broke when he was in the hands of Lord Rama. Anyway, some interesting Puranic stories today. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.